Session number 26589, Hugh Grant Dalton, Reel 1. This is recorded on the interviewer's mic, as the interviewee's mic is very noisy.
Hugh, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to contribute to the Imperial War Museum Sound Archive. It's very kind of you. Perhaps we might start. Can you tell me, first of all, the first question I always ask people is their date of birth?
Date of birth, 7th of March 1921.
And your service number?
904317 was the airman's one to begin with, and 88036 was my officer number. It comes off just like that. I will always remember those numbers.
Everybody does. Can you tell me, please, where you were born and something about your family?
Well, Mike, well, I'll go back to grandfather was rector of Wincanton, and he died when he was very young, in his 30s. And his father, he was one of, was it eight, nine children, fashionable in those days, Victorian families, who were at Shanks House at Cucklington. And from that family, as far as I can remember, the youngest son, John, retired as a Rear Admiral. Now, my grandfather, Colin, came in the middle. As I say, he died when he was very young. He had four children. The father was Leslie, and brother was Harold, who was killed in 1918. He had a daughter and another daughter who died young. Father was in the Dorset Regiment in World War I. He was taken prisoner in 1914, so that's how he managed to survive.
Yes, yes.
Mother, he married August 10th, 1914, in Ireland, special license in those days. I think they were at the, what was it, just outside Dublin? Was it the Curragh, is it?
I think so.
Yes, I think so. Anyway, while he was prisoner, my mother did various jobs, including driving a Selfridge delivery van in West London. So she learned to drive when she was young, in those days. And then at one stage she went out to Holland when the prisoners were coming through, and met up again when he was released, and taught him to drive. It was unusual that way around. Anyway, as I say, I was born in 1921, actually at Blackwater Road, Eastbourne. And then we went to live at Coudon, where I stayed there. I think I was only about 6 months after my birth, and rented a house in Bexhill, ostensibly for 6 months, and stayed there 6 years. After grandmother died, then we moved into her house in Eastbourne. That was in 1928. As far as my education concerned, I went to Harewood in Bexhill for a year or two. Then to a pre-prep school in Eastbourne, St. Augustine's. And then pre-prep school in 1930 to Oaklands Court in Broadstairs, where I stayed until 1934.
And of course you were a boarder.
As a boarder, oh yes.
Yes.
In fact, I was a boarder at one stage at Harewood.
And you would have been only about five or six?
Seven, something like that. I think I was only there as a day boy, only one term each. And, 1934. Then I went to Radley College. I stayed there until 1939. As far as sport is concerned, the school all played rugger. In the other two terms, I was a wet boy, which meant I rowed. I wasn't very successful in sports anyway. We all belong to the OTC, and the last term we they formed an air division of the last year rather of the ATC. So I was in the for what the, we might call the beginning of the ATC air training corps. First time I as far as seeing flying things go, I remember seeing the last Schneider Trophy race in 1931. We went down to South Sea. I've got a film of that taken from the beach. I remember seeing Amy Johnson on her tour. She landed at Eastbourne. I think she managed it without breaking her end. I remember seeing Alan Collins Flying Circus coming around. And also the last year before, in 39, I think we went to and watched an air race at Wilmington, which is just between Eastbourne and Lewes.
Now, Amy Johnson, was she, was this her a tour around Britain after the Australian flight? Or?
Yes, must have been. 31, I think that was also 31, says on my film. I've got a film of that. Just, you can just see at the back of the open top car. And then, as I say, in 1939, we had the Radley, we had the beginnings of the ATC. The last time we went over to Abington and we flew, and I remember being taken up by Group Captain Boothman, well, he was one of me then, those days, I think, in a Blenheim one.
What drew you towards the Air Training Corps rather than the other two divisions of the...
Well, my intention I was in 1939 was to go to Oxford, where I was going to read law, and I was going to join the University Air Squadron. That was my idea. I applied for a new college, but as I couldn't get in. I was going actually to Lincoln at the time. But I was home, of course, in 1939 when the war started. And within a week, I went over to Brighton and volunteered. And Oxford went by the board. Then, a month or so after that, went up to Uxbridge for the initial sort of medicals and all that sort of bits and pieces, and sent home for the winter, because it was such a bottleneck in the training.
Yes.
While I was home, hadn't done any maths at school, I used to go along to a local crammer to brush up on any maths. That was during the winter months.
Did you regret not going to Oxford? Do you now regret it? Did you regret it after
the
war?
Well, I should like to have done. I could have, I seem to remember that I could have done with a grant after the end of the war, but at that stage I thought, no, I'll carry on. I want to go into civil flying. That was that. I'm sure I would have enjoyed myself at Oxford if I had gone up.
Yes. So no regrets really now?
No, definitely.
I have met people who still harbour regrets that they did not, for example, take up these. I think they were commissioned short degrees, weren't they, in 1945 and 6?
I can't remember what they called them
now. I've heard some people talk about degrees that they were able to take in 2 years. They came straight out of the services, 45, 46, 47, and went did 2 years.
I wasn't all that brain. I wasn't a brilliant brain anyway. So I don't think it was rather a waste of time.
So you spent the winter of 1939-40 with your mathematical crammer.
Crammer.
And then what happened?
Is it May? Yes, May the 22nd. It starts off there. They sent for me and went up to Padgate, to the recruiting centre, for a week, where we were all had all our jabs and everything. And then we sent down to Hastings, to the initial training wing. I can remember drilling on the prom. We were at the Alexander Hotel. Pay parades were in there. There was an underground park. Do you know Hastings?
I had been to Hastings. I don't know it well.
There's an underground car park all the way along it, and the prom's on top. You'd have pay parades and parade there if it was wet. Now, I can remember one occasion, the area warnings going, and we all evacuated the hotel and spent the rest of the night in the lower parade on deck chairs. It was they built it during the 30s, I think, and with broken glass all the way along it. It was known as Bottle Alley. That was its nickname. If you know anybody from Hastings, it's always known as Bottle Alley.
And how long were you at Hastings for?
And Hastings, well, as a result of Dunkirk, we had to move. So we came down to Torquay for a couple of weeks or so. Yes, we did most of our drill and everything. All sort. The last week or so, I've got letters too, which I wrote home. It sounded as though we were going overseas or anywhere to train, in actual fact. But on the 11th of July, I was posted up to a number 5 elementary flying training school at Mere, Stoke-on-Trent, where we flew a Magister.
A Miles Magister.
That's right.
And those were little two-seater or three-seater?
Two-seater, monoplane. You've seen pictures of them?
I have, yes, but...
I'm sure you won't, yeah. Pass me that blue thing and get it out. No, it's okay. Yeah.
So you were training on Miles Magisters, and you mentioned just a moment ago, whilst we were off the tape, that you only flew a Tiger Moth once, which was usually the main training aircraft.
That's right. I flew a Tiger Moth off the war, actually. I was in the process of getting my B licence.
Any reason why you trained on Magisters?
Lack of a draw.
Right. And how were you selected for pilot training in the very, very beginning?
I really don't know. As far as I can remember, you started off aircrew, you were going to be a pilot. If you failed medically or something like that, or you weren't quite up to scratch, you became an observer. The lowest of the low was an air gunner at that stage.
So it was pilot, navigator.
Observer.
Observer.
Navigator as such. Observer also was bombing, maybe, see?
Yes.
They had their own half ring. Brevet. I think that's all I can say about that. As far as I can remember.
So you can't remember how you were selected for pilot training, but up you went to Stoke-on-Trent. And you were there for how long?
Until 24th of August 1940. Then we went down to number 6 SFTS, Little Rissington, which I think is now the Central Flying School, isn't it?
It may be, yes.
I believe it is, maybe. Well, we flew ensigns.
So
the only thing I can say about most of us, of course, obviously wanted to go on fighters initially, but that's where we went. initial flying. I think the people who did best at aerobatics and that sort of thing in training went on to fighters, and the others just went on to twins.
So that really was the sort of selection process, was it, between the two commands?
That's the only way I can see it, is if you were good at aerobatics, that sort of flying, you went on fighters. SFTS, Little Rissington, Anson's, probably going on to bombers or twins or multi-engine aircraft at the time. Very easy aeroplane to fly.
The Anson.
Anson.
It was easy.
Yes, very easy. Easier than the Oxford, which was also used for training later on, most of the time.
So you're not a qualified pilot at this stage, you're still...
You don't get your wings until you've passed out at SFTS. I I seem to remember stating preferences during the training for what I wanted to do. I should go on to lighter bombers, Blenheims or something like that. I didn't particularly want to end up on the heavies, the Wellington and the Whitley.
Why was that?
Well, I think that's just part of the, we want to go on fighters or something like that. Sort of attitude at the time. But, as I say, Little Rissington, I remember, this was at the time of the invasion scare, being on guard duty at night, on occasions, one on top of the control tower. Damn cold, frosty, cold night.
So you were training during the day, and from time to time you did guard duty at night?
Only just at the... those few days over the invasion scare, and they cancelled some training during the day, I think, as I can remember, just for a few days.
The invasion scare was mid-August to mid-September?
No, September the 12th, or whatever it is.
Oh, I see. So it was literally only a few days.
Mm. Obviously they wanted to get the training going again. I can remember, I see... Some of the letters I wrote home, I mentioned that I could see that London burning in the distance, that sort of thing.
From the daylight raids, which then became
night raids. Yeah.
Night raids. Yes.
Well, I stayed there, you see, until 8th of November at Rissington. So the night blitz was on then.
Yes. So take me through the remainder of your training, if you would, Hugh, please.
Yes, well, that is flying training on the Anson, circuits and bumps, cross countries. Tried to do a bit of bombing, I think, with 11.5 pound practice bombs. And then after that, I went up to a school of navigation at Craneage. That was on the 9th of November. Number 2 School of Air Navigation, Craneage, that's between Crewe and Manchester. I learned to do proper navigation, plotting and all that sort of thing, by day and by night. And I remember seeing Manchester burning in the distance one night.
So you trained. Did you do the full remit of training to be a navigator?
It was a short course.
Right.
But I was going on to Hampden, you see. And Hampden's pilot for the first six to ten trips, something like that, we were navigator. We were second pilot, come navigator, come bomber, everything else. After that, you went back to OTU, and you spent some more time flying, particularly night flying, for about a month or so. And then he went back to the squadron as first pilot. As I say, we went to Craneage. Then, the 3rd of January, I see, down to 16 OTU, Upper Hafen. I started off by navigating. There's one cross country where we were given the wrong information on beacons and the colours of the day. It used to be on rice paper, so you could eat it. Anyway, we got lost. We ended up at South Sandy's satellite. I'll find it here. A screen pilot was flying it.
A screen pilot?
They'll call you a screen. Screen from operations for a period. Because you see, the instructors at the OTU were either people who had done a tour of operations already. They used to go back to an OTU for 6 months to rest, which changed later to 18 months. Either that, or occasionally you'd have a staff pilot who they kept back for some reason or other. Anyway, he wasn't very good. He came in much too high.
Sergeant Westcombe wasn't very good.
No, that's right. Approached very high. Didn't touch down to the end of the flare path. We went through a dry stone wall. Took a couple of cars with us. And the engine, one of the engines came off. No fire. Nobody seriously damaged.
What are the consequences for a pilot like that, for Sergeant Westcombe? Does he get a real roasting from the CO, or...
I don't know what happened to him.
For endangering new air crew and losing an aircraft, presumably, as well as the two cars.
Well, there must have been an inquiry of some sort.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't remember of it being hauled in to give evidence or anything funny like that.
And what was your task on the aircraft? You were...
I was navigating, but I was under instruction at that stage.
So you would have a qualified navigator with you?
You'd have a qualified navigator and probably a wireless operator at the back.
So there'd just be the four of you?
Yeah.
So really the whole flight is designed to train you. Three men are trained, effectively being used to train one.
There might have been another navigator on board, I'm not sure. But the OTU courses, there were only six pilots on each course. Now, when it came to flying the Hampden, it's only a single seat. There's no dual control or anything like that. So the first flight you do is just looking over the pilot's shoulder and seeing as much as you can, and then it's for your first solo. Now, the Hampden had one or two tricks. It's a very nice airplane to fly, but it used to have a problem with what it was known as a stabilised yaw, which meant that if you applied the wrong amount of rudder on a turn, the rudder would lock over. And this usually happened on the approach, about 500 feet or so. If that happened there, you had no hope, you just went straight in.
Because you had not enough height to correct.
That was the fault on the Hampden. It could also happen if you're doing a flattish turn on a bombing run.
If you're doing a what turn?
Flattish.
A flattish turn.
On the bombing run. Practice bombing. Which I seem to remember we used to do about 3,000 feet.
And was that high enough to get you out of difficulty?
Just about, I think.
What was the remedial procedure?
I can't remember. I can't remember what the drill was.
But it had this quirk. Which?
Yeah. Well, the Halifax had something very similar to begin with. I don't know if you've noticed the tail on the Halifax. The earlier ones, they are that sort of shape. And the later ones are square.
Yes.
And they had, as I say, they had something similar, and that was known as a rudder stall.
So the Hampden had what in effect was a rudder stall, so you had to watch out for that.
Yeah.
Apart from that, it was a easy,
beautiful
aircraft to fly.
Yeah, it was.
How many crew did it have?
Four.
And it was a sort of light twin-engine bomber.
Its bomb load was usually about 2,500 pounds. It would take up a 2,000-pound bomb on its own, and a couple of 250-pounders on the wings, on external racks. Either that, or you would have four or 500 pounds in the bomb bay. It would also carry a mine, 1,500-pound mine, which we did quite a lot of. That is known as gardening.
Yes.
We did quite a lot of those on hand and gardening trips.
Did you?
Yeah. We'll come to that in a minute.
Yes, certainly.
As I say, we went to Upper Hayford.
But at the moment, you're still training.
Yes.
Training as a navigator, or training to learn navigation, I should say.
Training to learn navigation and learning to fly the Hampden at the same time. I finished that on the 19th of April, 1941. I was posted to 44 Squadron, Waddington. where I stayed a week. I was posted in there up. I did one trip while I was there.
One trip, one operational trip.
One operational.
So when you were posted to Wallingford, you were now fully qualified.
As second pilot, navigator, bomb aimer.
Second pilot, navigator, bomb aimer.
Yep. Because I was in the nose of the aircraft. The navigation was done down there. The bomb sites were down there. We also had one gun.
So this is the Hampden. In effect, the Hampden had two pilots on board.
Yes. You could swap over, but it was very tricky. A little squash. I tried it once in the air.
Did it have an automatic pilot, so
yes.
You could...
Yes. Back of the... Possibly, illustrating.
The back of the seat folded down.
Down. You scrambled over.
And you're just... So you're showing me a copy of the Hampden cockpit from the Illustrated London News, dated June the 10th, 1939.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I went...
There's the cockpit. There's the bucket seat, because you used to have a pilot's type chute.
A pilot's type?
Chute, parachute.
So, which you sat on?
Yeah. As firefighter pilots used to have.
Yes.
At the back of the seat, there's down.
Right. So, somehow... Here, you've got controls and fuselage immediately to your left and right of you. In order to change places in the Hampden in flight, you switch the automatic pilot on, and somehow you climb out this way, and the other chap climbs in.
Yeah.
But not a lot of space.
No. Particularly if you've got flying kit on.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, with a parachute stuck to your bottom.
No, you wouldn't have a parachute on. You'd leave the parachute in the seat.
Oh, would you?
Oh, yes.
Well, how do you, if you want to jump out quickly, take it with you?
You go over the top.
Yes, but you have to clip it on if you're leaving.
No. Parachute's attached to me. And we bail out over the top. Slide the roof back.
I see.
Same as the fighter pilot would.
Yes.
The hood comes back. You just go out over the top. No ejection seat, of course.
No.
There was always the danger that you were going to hit the tail of the way across.
On the way out?
Yeah.
Yes. And where? How would, just while we're on this subject of jumping out of aircraft, how would the other three crew members get out?
Well, they have the ordinary chest parachute, and the gunner's at the back. Ooh! They get there are hatches at the back. There's also a hatch, incidentally, above, just behind here, where this is taken from, up the top.
But again, difficulty of tangling up with the tail.
Mm. Either that, or I think there was a hatch at the bottom, under the, in the nose, as I can remember. Well, we 44 Squadron, one trip, post-healing error, then I was sent to 50 Squadron, Lindholm.
Well, before we go to 50 Squadron, one trip, what was your one trip? Because this is your first operational trip, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, we've got four with not here. Hamburg, second pilot, April the 26th.
1941.
In a Hampden. Hampden, I can tell you what it was. You want the red, not the letters, the number.
I'd like to know something about your first trip. I'd like to know how long it took, what you felt about it. First trips must have been extremely memorable. It would not have been, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it would not have phased into the great mass of operations that you did. Would that be right or not?
MMP4310, Sergeant Mercer, was self, two crew, operations bombing Hamburg. Where are we? 6 hours 45 minutes. I don't remember anything about it.
Not before, during, or after?
Don't remember anything at all about it. All I can remember about Waddington is seeing the other squadron there, was it 2 or 7? They had Manchesters. And there was also a bat flight. standard beam approach flight based. I think I remember seeing them operating or trying to operate in fog. And I'm afraid that's all I remember about Waddington.
Your 1 week. Okay.
1 week.
And then you went on to number 50 squadron.
Then we went to 50 squadron, that was a different matter. But at Lindholm, because I was very happy there. The CEO of the squadron was Gus Walker. You know him?
I know of the name.
Very well known in the service, but well.
Well, I've heard people mention the name.
Yes, he lost an arm, I'm afraid, at North Luffenham went after he left 50. When he was supervising the rescue at Hampden, I think it had crashed on south side when the bombs went off.
When he was too close.
That's right. He had been, I seem to remember, scrum half for the RAF before the war. Okay. I seem to remember hearing that.
So he was a fine sportsman.
Yes.
And presumably, therefore, invalided out of the service?
No, he carried on.
He carried on, did he?
Right through, oh yes.
Probably carried
he
on.
Retired at, he was an Air Chief Marshal when he retired.
Was he?
He was number one in the RAF Association. A number of years.
No, I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
So.